What's up? This is Jared Holt, and welcome back to Posting Through It. This is a bi-weekly podcast. In between the episodes of the podcast, there's a newsletter you can check out at postingthroughit.com. You can subscribe there for $5 a month to support this show. I'll have some bonus content coming soon. I'm still waiting for feedback. I've heard from a couple people on what they might want to see as bonus content. Is that a podcast series that goes really deep on one topic? Is it extra newsletters? Let me know. DM me on Twitter, DM the podcast on Twitter. Respond to one of the emails you get as a newsletter. Find a way to get in touch. There's a million and one ways to reach me. This week, I'm going to be talking with my guest about Web3. Web3 has kind of turned into a buzzword. Depending who you ask, it can be cryptocurrency, blockchain, VR, metaverse, whatever. There's a lot under the umbrella these days. I'm not necessarily an expert in Web3, so I'm having Molly White, she's a software engineer, longtime English Wikipedia editor, and an independent researcher on cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology, joining me this week. If that sounds really dense, I'm hoping that it won't be too bad. We're going to talk about things in a general sense, some general themes, what is Web3, how should we think about it, and I'm hoping it'll be accessible to people who maybe aren't up to date on the latest, you know, tit and tat of what is happening in that universe. Because whatever is happening, even though it's not so great, the people who run some of our biggest tech platforms that, you know, are kind of the architects of online life as it is, are investing some praise, a whole lot of money, and their reputations on this being the direction that the future of the internet is headed in. We're going to take a short musical break, but we'll just get right to it. When we come back, you'll hear my conversation with Molly White. On the show now, I have Molly White. Molly, how's it going? I'm really glad that I was able to take a little bit of your time this week, and thanks for joining me and the listeners of this show to talk about Web3.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's going well.
Tell listeners a little bit about your background and how you got interested in the technology being called Web3. I understand a lot follows under that umbrella these days, but I'm curious sort of how you got into it.
Yeah, so I'm a software engineer, and, you know, I try to follow what's going on in tech and on the web. You know, I mostly do web dev, so I try to keep up with that kind of thing. And, you know, I had been aware of Bitcoin and crypto and all these different technologies for a while. I sort of first encountered them in the early to mid, 2010s or so, when, you know, some of the people in the free software movement were really interested. But, you know, it sort of didn't appeal to me at the time. And so I just sort of, you know, moved on. But towards the middle of last year or so, we were sort of entering this enormous hype cycle with crypto and this idea that people were calling Web3 and that, you know, crypto and blockchains might be the future of the web. And so as, you know, a web dev and someone who's just interested in emerging technologies, I was like, am I missing something? You know, like what changed, you know, when, between what I last knew about crypto and what it is today?
Why are there apes everywhere?
Yeah, like, exactly. I was like, wait, why is, you know, my grandma supposed to be buying crypto now? And, you know, what is this whole social networks on the blockchain thing? And so I started to learn about it a little bit more. And as I looked into it, I felt like there were really two narratives. There was sort of the primary narrative in the media and on social media around crypto is the future, blockchains are going to be the future of the web and society and finance, and you're going to become rich overnight, and this could be your ticket to generational wealth. And then there was the other side of things, which was a project would get hacked, and then someone would get scammed, and then something would just implode, or someone would decide that they should put data on a blockchain that has no business being there. And those things felt like they were really ephemeral. Like I would see an instance of that, and then people would just sort of move on. You know, there would be tweets about it, and then people would lose interest, and, you know, everyone would move on. And so it felt like it might be useful to try to highlight some examples of how, you know, the narrative around crypto being the future of the web and the reality of it were really not in sync at all.
Yeah, and you started a blog, would that be the right word to call it? It's called Web3 is going just great, which is an amazing name. But let's pivot. Like, so listeners of this show, like, I normally talk about, you know, explicitly like political stuff. I would argue that anything involving finance or data storage or whatever is political, but maybe we can get into that towards the end there. But, you know, they may have heard this term Web3, but beyond associating it with something like Bitcoin or Ethereum, they might not know exactly what all this entails. And, you know, I worry that if, you know, if you just type Web3 into like Google or something, what you're going to get hit with is a ton of hype and marketing bullshit about what Web3 is. It is the future, wah, wah, wah. But like, can you give it to us straight to the extent that it's possible, I guess? because it is just, it's like whatever Mark Zuckerberg is doing with like Second Life, but with a VR headset, I guess, is like supposedly Web3 now, and like right. Cryptocurrency is. But for the layman, what is Web3?
Well, I think that it is a really nebulous term, sort of intentionally, and I think it is more than anything a marketing strategy. The number basically comes from the idea that there are different eras of the web. There's Web 1, which is sort of the early internet, where it was, you know, fairly rudimentary. Most people were not posting stuff online. If you did have a website, it was kind of a challenge to get it set up. And then, you know, there's sort of this idea of Web 2, which some people will refer to as today's web, where social networks are really popular. A lot of people post their own content online, be it, you know, just blog posts or photos or tweets or whatever it might be. And so people are sort of coming up with this idea of what the next web might be. Like, what is the next generation of the web going to look like? And the crypto industry has really latched on to this and, in my opinion, done a pretty good job of, you know, getting everyone to believe that Web3 will be blockchains and crypto. And so the term is often used to refer to any sort of web projects that involve blockchains. And, you know, a lot of them sort of hinge on the idea that the, you know, any sort of payments will be done with cryptocurrencies, any sort of data storage will happen on a blockchain. But like I said, it's more than anything a marketing term and a successful one, but you know, it's been used to really sort of shine up the image of crypto and blockchains and sort of make them seem like the next inevitable era of the web, when I don't think there's actually that much proof or evidence that crypto and blockchains are really well suited to being the next generation of the web.
Yeah, I remember seeing a tweet, and it's so hard to distinguish like satirical crypto accounts from like real ones. I'm doing such a bad job of it so far, but I remember one was like, one day you'll use an NFT to unlock your car, and I was like, I'm good with keys, I don't know. Like, I'll just stick with that for now. This Web3 concept, like, is, as you put it very well, I think, a lot of hype and marketing, right? But what has been sort of undeniable, even if it is this shallow promise or this sales pitch, is that a ton of money is being poured into this. And it's not just, you know, of course, there's the retail investors, people who, you know, in the middle of last year were like, aha, this is how I'm going to finally buy a house, or this is how I'm going to put my kids through school, because look at this, the line just goes up and up and up. And of course, that is not where the line is today. But you know, it's not just those retail investors, it's also leaders in the tech industry, some politicians, and the country of El Salvador, I guess. But, you know, there's been like various amounts of high stake buy-in into this vision of the next generation of the internet. And I'm curious what you think, you know, some of the motivating factors would be in play. I think maybe for the business leaders, it's a little bit more clear. Maybe it's just a financial interest thing. But I guess as far as the way that politics is sort of bought into it or not bought into it at various levels, I'm curious what you make of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do think that business people, you know, venture capitalists and entrepreneurs often are interested in Web3 for the financial motivation. You know, I think crypto has done a very good job of making a small group of people enormously wealthy. You know, it sort of does a good job at siphoning money from those retail investors towards the venture capitalists or the early investors, the entrepreneurs, those folks. And so I think there's a pretty clear motive for those people. I think the political motive is actually fairly driven by the same thing. There's been an enormous amount of lobbying happening, especially in the US, by these crypto firms. So they're putting just enormous amounts of money into pressuring politicians to take a friendly view of crypto and, you know, regulatory capture, you know, all sorts of different angles at trying to make sure that the legislative and regulatory environment is remains very friendly to crypto. So that's really the reason I put behind a lot of it. You know, I think a lot of them, especially in the venture capital world, will push these very idealist narratives about how crypto will solve all the world's problems and it will democratize the web and these different things. But I have a pretty cynical view of how many of them actually truly believe that. You know, it is in their best interest to get more individual investors to keep buying in because that's how the line keeps going up. And so, you know, they can't just say, well, I'm becoming really wealthy off of this, you know, keep giving us your money. But they can say that this is good for you and, you know, you will become wealthy, even if that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, that hasn't really panned out. And I say this as somebody who last year lost, I'm ashamed to admit it, but lost about a grand in cryptocurrency, got swept up a little bit, right? And thinking, oh, this could be good. This could be, you know, I bought the sales pitch, you know, and then eventually was like, oh, I'm getting married next year. Maybe I shouldn't have my money in a volatile financial vehicle at the moment. But the pitch of Web3 has really not panned out for a lot of people. As you pointed out, the people at the top, that very small group of people, have seemed to make off like bandits. But the reality of it for most people who have interacted, at least with the crypto and NFT space, is that it has not worked out. The vision has not panned out. And I'm curious if you've seen the sales pitch change at all, you know, especially given this year that the values of different cryptocurrencies, which, you know, are sort of acting as the engines for this whole thing, as those have plummeted, has the way that the people making the sales pitch for Web3 changed much?
Yeah, I think it's constantly evolving. You know, so crypto has been around for over a decade now. And when there's something that, you know, so heavily depends on the belief that it has value, they sort of always need to be coming up with new stories to make people buy in. Because you can't necessarily just use the same line that you were using in, you know, 2015 to get people to buy in today, especially after there were crashes and people were burned. So, you know, I think the Web3 narrative is sort of one of the newer ones. We weren't hearing about Web3 in, you know, 2018 or something like that. And that has been quite effective at getting people to believe that these, you know, monkey JPEGs are going to be their life savings and, you know, the ticket to putting their kids through college or whatever it might be. And, you know, obviously there's been a bit of a downturn in the crypto industry. And so we've seen people backing off of the narrative that, you know, this is going to be, you're going to become an overnight millionaire. You know, this is, you should quit your job and become a crypto investor, quote unquote. And now people are starting to try to say, you know, oh, well, this is the time to build. You know, this is, the technology is going to pan out eventually. And so if you just hold on long enough, if you just keep believing, it'll go back up. So, you know, it sort of constantly changes and it depends a lot on what's going on with the sort of broader markets, I would say. But one thing you will notice is that regardless of what is happening in crypto, if it's going really well, if things are going really poorly, if a bunch of projects have just imploded, it doesn't really matter. There is never someone saying, I don't know, maybe now isn't the time to buy crypto. You know, there's no one saying, well, maybe you should hold off. It's always, it's time to buy. Now's the best time to buy. If the, you know, if crypto prices are really down, then people will say it's a discount. You know, you can buy at the bottom and you'll become so wealthy when it goes back up again. If it's going up, people will say, look, it's been going up. You know, you don't want to miss out. You should buy right now. There's always this, the end goal is always the same. It's the story that changes.
You know, we've been talking about cryptocurrency. I'd like to broaden it out to other things that fall under the Web3 platform, but you know, 2020 and 2021, those were like the hype phases of crypto and NFTs. That's what we've been talking about. You know, the monkey JPEGs, that's your ticket, or the like pixelated little stick figure guys, that is your secondary backup ticket. This year has really been sort of level setting. We've had some pretty high profile charges filed against like Razzlecan. I forget how she said that. The legend. The Versace better win. Just Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about, listeners. But some expectations have been leveled out, I think, generally speaking. It seems to me, at least from the outside looking in, that at least the media like fascination with this has kind of matured a bit. People being a little bit more realistic. You know, all this stuff kind of exploded in value, or maybe I should say perceived value, and have since fallen back to earth. And I don't even know if the prices things are at now are appropriate, but it's definitely a lot more humble. There's been reports of theft, of platform hacking, a lot of which I've found out through Web3 is going just great, project that you're running. And a lot of people have lost money, and it just kind of seems like the narrative had kind of arced up into its peak hype. This is, you know, you need this to get into a club. I remember reading a story about a restaurant in New York City that you had to have like an NFT to get into. And now it's sort of falling back down to earth. And I'm curious your thoughts, I guess, in a broader sense of those kind of life cycles, because a lot of things in society get hyped like that, right? This one just happened to have an enormous price tag on it. Curious if you have any reflections now that it sort of is on the downward arc. I mean, maybe it'll go back up, to be fair. We don't know. But if you have any reflections looking back on that time period of like what the warning signs were, or like what maybe you hoped people had realized sooner.
I think there were a lot of warning signs. You know, the thing about bubbles is they always pop. You know, if there is, you know, if something is being overvalued and there is no, especially with crypto, where there is really no asset behind it, there is really no good or service being created, you can say that there is no intrinsic value to crypto, so any value is overvalued. You know, they can only ever get so big before things start to crash down. And with crypto, I think the whole industry is sort of big red flags. You know, it's like everywhere you look, there's red flags. There's so little transparency on how these projects are being run. I mean, there are few, if any, other industries where you can be totally anonymous and start a project where people are putting millions or tens of millions of dollars in. You know, and there were several instances where people were doing that, and the person behind the project turned out to be someone who had committed financial fraud several times, and they only find out later on. So, you know, I think that's a huge red flag. There's very little disclosure happening around how projects are handling your funds, or, you know, if you're putting your money into a crypto exchange to hold on to it, you know, what are they doing with your funds? Are they just holding them? Are they investing them into some other projects? So, you know, the whole thing is just pretty shady. You know, as far as these bubbles go, it's history is repeating itself to some extent with crypto. You know, this was definitely the most high profile bubble of crypto. The prices were higher than ever before, and then they've, you know, dropped back down precipitously. But there were previous crypto bubbles that looked pretty similar, where people got so excited. They thought this was going to be, you know, their ticket to financial freedom or whatever it might be. They got, you know, swept up in the marketing language around things that were related to crypto, and then everything came crashing down. And it happens every couple of years in the crypto industry. And I think, unfortunately, it may be doomed to repeat indefinitely until there is some actual regulatory oversight where you can't just sell people, you know, vaporware pretty much. You can't just promise people that you'll get them these huge returns that are not possible without running a Ponzi scheme.
Right. Yeah. I get letters from like my Fidelity account. Do I throw them in the garbage most of the time? Yes. Should I read them? Probably. But like, you know, at least those kind of disclosures are present in like what I'll call the quote unquote real financial system. Because money, what is money anyway? zooming out, having a great day here. Zooming out a bit, you know, we're talking about cryptocurrency, and like a lot of that kind of has been the backbone or like the main hype item of what people are calling Web3. But, you know, you've been watching the space very closely. We have alluded to earlier that it is kind of becoming this umbrella marketing term. What other things are going on in Web3? What are people calling Web3?
It's a lot of things. You know, I personally consider Web3 to mean anything that is like web related and blockchain related. But my personal definition and everyone else's definition can be very different. You know, I feel like everyone sort of defines it differently, and the definition changes based on what's convenient to some extent. So a lot of metaverse projects are being referred to as Web3, including, you know, the Horizon Worlds one, which is Meta's, Facebook's big metaverse project. And like that one doesn't have a clear crypto tie-in, at least as of yet. But some people are referring to that as Web3. And then, you know, a lot of different projects around decentralized finance is sometimes referred to as Web3. And anything to do with NFTs is pretty much golden as far as that. And then, you know, social networks, different online services that you might use in your day to day. You know, I've sort of compared it to the explosion of Uber in 2010, you know, the early 2010s.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, where Uber became super popular, really highly valued, you know, it was this big new thing. And then all of the tech companies started to say, okay, so we're going to do Uber, but for groceries. It's going to be Uber, but for your laundry. You know, and they basically were getting these huge valuations by venture capital firms who had missed out on Uber and were hoping that they could get the next Uber. And I think now what we're seeing is the same sort of cycle where some Web3 companies have been so intensely valued, and some of them have created big returns for the early investors. And so everyone's looking for the next OpenSea or the next, you know, big crypto project. And so everyone is doing X, but on the blockchain. So instead of Uber, but for X, it's, you know, it's groceries, but on the blockchain, laundry, but on the blockchain. And those are often all considered to be Web3 projects. Anything that's really more than just the crypto, you know, it's not just trading Bitcoin, is often captured under the umbrella of Web3.
So in your view, because on this podcast, we also cover the online world, and of course, this is something that exists primarily online, as far as social media platforms are involved, as you mentioned, the Horizons project from Meta has been referred to as Web3. Twitter has gone really into it. You can set like NFTs as your profile pictures and whatnot. I don't think like it's on Instagram crypto influencers live on Instagram and YouTube and stuff, of course, but the platforms themselves haven't really jumped in all the way into the water the same way something like Twitter has, you know, putting on its fly fishing boots and like trotting out there, right? But I'm curious, as far as the hype cycle goes, as far as the marketing scheme goes, it seems like a lot of it is on Twitter because that's most friendly, but I'm curious what you think of like the role social media has played in this, both in terms of trying to promote this stuff, but also, you know, you've been able to use your project, Web3 is going just great, in Twitter to offer up sort of a counter narrative to say, like, actually, this isn't like a sunshine and rainbows type of project. This has a lot of really real risk involved here and like a lot of scams going on, and maybe you should consider that before you jump all the way into the deep end.
Social media has definitely been an enormous part of the hype cycle. I don't think crypto could have come near its popularity in the past couple of years without social media. You know, like I said, crypto is so predicated on people believing that it has value, and you know, there are ways to do that without social media. Obviously, the press has played a role. Companies have... Sorry about my dog. I don't know what he's barking at.
It's okay. We love dogs on this show.
Hang on a second. So, yeah, social media has played a really big role in the hype cycle. You know, people are really... they buy into influencers who are able to really hype up these projects. They take advice from these financial advisors, you know, the same people who are saying this is not financial advice while they're telling you to buy some new coin that has just emerged. And I think there has also been a lot of capture in the social media world where people are getting paid to promote projects, and it's sort of the norm. And so a lot of these influencers who are saying, you know, hey, I just found this new NFT project and it's so cool and I bought 10 of them. You know, if you look into it, they were actually given the NFTs or even paid by the NFT projects to do that.
Yeah, we've seen that with celebrities too. Yes. Like, I believe the one that I heard about was like Justin Bieber's NFT, I guess, was like the money to buy it was transferred and sort of shuffled a few times. That way it looked like, oh, wow, look, Justin Bieber or Jimmy Fallon or whoever was just so into this. But it's...
Yeah, people basically try to create what looks like organic demand by celebrities. And it's like, yeah, Justin Bieber loves NFTs. And it's like, does he really? Or, you know, is he just getting these big payouts to get involved in NFTs? And, you know, I mean, the one thing about crypto is because everything happens on public blockchains, people try to obfuscate that kind of stuff. But you can sort of trace it to more, you know, to more of an extent than I think people expect. And so, you know, I don't know how unusual this is. It could be that this is a widespread practice throughout, you know, the social influencer world, throughout the celebrity world, and crypto is actually providing more of an insight into what's happening. But, you know, there's a lot of really shady stuff that's been going on, especially on social media, to convince the average person to buy into these crypto projects. And so I think social media has been enormously important as far as getting people to put their money in.
So, like I referred to at the beginning, you know, we're coming up on time now, but I do want to get your take and then maybe I'll offer mine. Listeners of the show may be like, Jared, what the fuck? I could tune into this show to hear about politics and the internet. What's with this Web3 crap? Do you think Web3 is political or like has a political component?
Absolutely. People will say crypto is not political, technology is not political, and I think that's completely a lie. You know, all technology is political. Crypto comes from a very libertarian origin where, you know, it sort of emerged in the aftermath of the great financial crisis, and people felt like the government was being they were reacting in ways that was unfair to them by printing money and, you know, manipulating the financial markets and bailing out these big banks that, you know, at the expense of, you know, the average person. And so they wanted to create a financial system that was completely outside of the bounds of government control. And I don't know how people can really argue that a technology that comes from that is apolitical, right? Like, that is so political.
Right, yeah.
But even, you know, even ignoring that, I think all technology has political implications. And crypto, you know, has, I think, continued to maintain its fairly libertarian bent. You know, people get very prickly about any sort of intervention into crypto by governments, regulators, you know, any sort of body, state body. And they talk about how they can use crypto to evade things like taxes or sanctions or, you know, any sort of state body, be it authoritarian regimes in sort of the brighter cases, you know, where there is very reasonable, you know, purpose to evading the actions of those regimes, but also to evading, you know, some of the more reasonable actions of the state, like by trying to, you know, cut down on money laundering and financial crime. And so I think, you know, anything involving crypto is inextricably linked to the political side of things, even if the project is just, you know, selling you monkey JPEGs. You really can't ignore that the currency and, well, the asset that you're using to buy those monkey JPEGs, you know, has those ties.
I'll offer my take and then we'll close it up here. I agree with you on both points. Primarily the one that technology is like inherently political, because even if you're going to look at technology as a tool for political actors to use, like, for example, the far right the Alex Joneses of the world, they love cryptocurrency because they can get big chunks of money and nobody knows where it came from. And are they paying taxes on it? We're not sure. Is it, can they hide money when they're getting sued? Maybe, we don't know. And they love that element to it. But even just as a tool, I think there is politics involved, because what are tools but like structures, right? And who builds those structures? What considerations go into the building of those structures? Who does it benefit? Who is left out? All of that, even if it's not a front of the mind conscious choice or thought, has political implications. So for example, cryptocurrency is blowing up. It's going to be the future of the internet. Well, what about people in the world that don't have access to high-speed internet? What about people who don't even have bank accounts? Like underbanked people, I think is the industry terminology. How are they supposed to like transfer money and get these little coins or whatever? Are they going to look up like a, I've seen like Bitcoin ATMs or something? Like, is that even sustainable, right? Like, then what do you have? A piece of paper that says, trust us, you've got some Bitcoin, don't worry about it. Like, so it's even just like those limiting factors, right? Have an element of politics, differentiating between the people that have and the people that don't, the people that benefit, the people that suffer. So I think conversations like this are important because they do have political implications, because they shape the world around us. And if this Web3 stuff keeps getting all this money, keeps getting this buy-in from powerful people, as dystopian as it may seem, the future might look at least a little bit something like this. So it's I think it's good to kind of get up to speed and understand what the dangers are. Molly, thanks for joining the show this week. Tell listeners about Web3 is going just great. And I saw that you have a newsletter too called White Space.
Yes. Yeah, so Web3 is going just great is the project where I track all of the disasters in Web3 and other crypto spaces. That's at web3isgoinggreat.com or at web3isgreat on Twitter. I also have a newsletter, White Space, which comes out roughly weekly. And that usually contains a recap of what's been going on in the crypto world, where I go into a little more detail than I have on my shorter form Web3 is Going Great project. And then I also just keep people updated on what else I'm up to. You know, I've been doing a lot more research and deep dives into some of the crypto world. I'm starting to think a lot about, you know, okay, so if we don't want the future of the web to look like crypto and blockchains, what should the future of the web look like? How can we achieve some of these goals? So that's the place to stay updated on all that. And that's at newsletter.mollywhite.net.
I think that last part's so important, because something I try to talk about on the show sometimes is not just the importance of identifying bad things and saying they're bad, but also trying to come up with a positive vision of what the future is to offer as an alternative. Molly, because this is the podcast that it is, formerly called Shitpost, now called Posting Through It, and you're a guest on it, you get the last question that everybody gets. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
So my sort of probably expected response to this is I love Wikipedia. I think it is the most wonderful thing. It's a wonderful project. But everyone knows Wikipedia. So I would say, branching off of that, my favorite thing is the social media account Depths of Wikipedia, which is on Twitter, Instagram, a bunch of different places. It's run by this wonderful woman who finds the weirdest sort of nuggets of information that are hiding within Wikipedia and then shares them with the world. And I think she's doing absolutely hilarious work.
All right. Well, Molly, thanks for joining this week.
Thanks for having me.